Guys, we have Peter Teixeira with us, the mayor of Midvale. Where's Midvale?
The media often refers to us as the municipality in the south of Joburg. It's a small municipality with a big heart.
And 11 clean audits.
As well as the most financially sustainable municipality in the country, according to Ratings Africa.
There we go. I must put that one out there.
I have the poorest mayor. Guys, we have Peter Teixeira with us, the mayor of Midvale. Peter, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And, you know, we were just talking about Midvale earlier on, and Angus had something that he was saying.
Angus, what were you saying?
What was it about the view?
What about the view?
Well, you wanted to know where Midvale is.
Where's Midvale? And I'll tell you why I'll ask you the question. So I Googled the Midvale when I heard I was speaking to you, but I clicked on pictures and all I saw was farmland and animals, and I was looking for the skyscrapers. And then my colleague just told me you guys just got a mall as well now.
All right, so Midvale is in the south of Joburg.
Yeah.
We close to the Free State, Sasolburg as well, about 40 minutes away from OR Tambo International Airport. And we are a semi-rural municipality, so hence you saw the pictures of probably farmland and plots, etc. It's a small municipality with a big heart, if I may just put it that way. So the media often refers to us as the municipality in the south of Joburg. But we're actually Midvale, so we don't always agree with them calling us the south. The south is where Luyolo is from. We are in Midvale.
Is that
further past?
Is that Brakpan?
No, that is not Brakpan. I am not from Brakpan.
Brakpan's the east.
Everyone calm down. Yeah. I am defending Brakpan. Hi, everyone in Dal Park.
So how long have you lived in Midvale all your life?
Yeah, look, I've been there since I think a year or two. I was actually born in Nelspruit in Mpumalanga. And then we moved there with my dad. I was about a year or two. So you can say for plus minus 40 years, because I'm 42 this year. So
you've seen it all in Midvale.
I've seen it all in Midvale. I've seen it develop.
1981.
82.
December. June.
Are you June?
Yeah, so 6 months between us.
I'm younger than you.
Yeah, 6 months.
Yeah.
Take it.
Well, aside from the ages, Peter, just tell us about you. How did you grow up? Who are you? And just unpack for us.
So I'm from a mixed race relationship. My dad is Portuguese, hence the surname Teixeira.
Teixeira
is the correct way. And my mom is Tsonga.
Oh, wow.
I was born in Nelspruit, Mpumalanga. And, I've lived most of my life, as I earlier indicated, in Midvale. And I grew up in a business background. My dad, you know, the Portuguese people. Fish and chips.
Fish and chips.
That made the best chips, Russians, fish, etc. So I had a good upbringing, I would say. And, I've always been a person that loved sports at school. So I was the rugby captain primary school, high school. I was the prefect. Okay, back then, I've told you my age. We used to refer to leaders as prefects. I don't know what Loyola in them. I don't know. Is it still? No, yeah, it's still. Now they're LRCs.
RCL. Sorry.
So I've always been a leader as a youngster, from sports, enjoyed sports, many of the other things, that youngsters got up to. And
But what position did you play?
I played flank. I was quite bigger than this, what I look now. Politics has gotten me to this size now.
Although there's something wrong with it, because
I've
gone in the opposite direction here. I've played rugby all my life.
Yeah, but look, I think, I'm a guy that also still cherishes his friends. I still have the same friends that I had from primary school.
Yeah.
I still hang out with those friends of mine. And I'm just a simple person, a go-to type of guy, chilled guy, as they would say, the younger people. That's me.
And when did the love for politics come? How did that, or how was that born? And I ask that because you've done exceptionally well as a mayor, and we'll get to that at a later stage. Yeah. But where did it start for you?
Look, as I said, I've always been a leader from school. Being captain, etc. I've always led people. And just after high school, there were certain issues in my area where I come from, Highbury in Midvale. And, I used to talk a lot to the counselor who now happens to be an MMC under me.
Yeah.
I felt at the time that perhaps I should just give it a try as well and be the voice of the people in council.
Yeah.
And what I then did is I went and read the constitution of various political parties, looked at what they stood for, and the DA's values and principles, and the constitution for the DA for me stood out. And hence, I then said at the time that, no, I want to stand as a DA councillor.
Yeah.
And this was now in 2016.
And that's an interesting point that I'd maybe like to unpack, is that many people today, when they make their cross and they vote, it's based on tradition, it's based on what they heard about the other. It's never based on actually understanding the constitutions and the policies of a party. We've got some of these small little popcorn parties that don't even have policies. Yes. They've made more Facebook lives than what they've made policies, you know what I mean? And so really, and it's important for me to try and get this out of you. How important was it, and take away the fact that you're the mayor, but how important was it as a young person, being a leader, wanting to make a difference, whether that was going to be in council or whether it was just going to be in civil society, how important was it for you to actually understand what different parties stood for before you placed your cross or your support behind that party?
Yeah, look, for me it was very, very important because, you know, I had an idea of what most of the other political parties stood for. And I just did not agree with what they stood for at that particular time. But then I thought, let me do research and actually have a look at what, you know, a party that speaks to me and how I want to see the country develop and go forward. And, before I would put that cross, so I wasn't just going to put a cross there for the sake of what I see or read on social media or on television, etc. I wanted to understand exactly what the party is saying, what the party's stance is on certain crucial, critical matters that affect us as citizens of this country. And this is why I actually did my homework and I went in and I looked at all of, you know, the policies and what our position was on certain matters, on education, all of these things that I had interest in, but also not for me only, my family and friends and everyone around me. Because then it made it easier for me to go and put a cross on the ballot paper, because then I knew exactly what I was voting for. So I think that this is something that perhaps many South Africans should start looking
Absolutely.
At. Because we vote just based on what we read, what someone said, rumors, etc. And we don't actually make the time and effort to go and actually understand and get the facts of what a certain party stands for and what we are saying.
100%.
Yeah. And it's like, no party is ever going to be perfect. And there are bad apples in every party. There are good people in parties, there's bad people in parties. But the values of the party, the values and what they stand for remain. So the guys that don't pull their weight and the guys that do stupid things and the guys that steal, irrespective of what party, then they find their way out the door, except if they in the ANC, then they get promoted. But I mean, even with us, those guys find their way out the door, but the values of the party remain the same. The mission, the policy remains the same. And it's so important that voters out there actually read to understand who they're voting for, why they're voting for it, and effectively what they're voting for.
Exactly.
Because if you just vote purely on tradition, I'm sorry, tradition has changed.
Yes.
30 years, 60 years ago, tradition's completely changed.
Exactly. And you know, Angus, the one thing Kabelo was mentioning as well, I think people are also drawn to issues, right? And people interact with politics, particularly either with issues that predominantly affect them or issues that they see happening in their community. And Kabelo, when we were speaking about this, because we did our little research on just what is happening in Midvale, and, Kabelo was mentioning education. Kabelo, I don't know, to unpack that part, really, because I thought it was such an important one.
I guess I just wanted to understand. So now you've done your research and you're making a leap into public rep and the public space. And how that's linked to the education question, I see you've done, you know, donations to school. I see you have student funding. I saw you launched some tech hub at Meriton with Minister Solly. Did education play a big role in why you made that leap? And I'm just very curious about your involvement in the education space and how you're using your role to that end.
Yeah, no, definitely. Education is the key. So I've always believed that, you know, especially as a public representative, you know, we need to already, South Africa is a country with one of the highest unemployment rates in the world.
Yeah.
And it's worse if you don't have some sort of formal education, you know, background, et cetera, or certain skills, et cetera. So to me, it was very important from the onset to ensure that we upskill our people. We give them the basic, for example, certificate, diplomas, or even degrees. So hence, we've got the Mayoral Scholar Fund at the municipality where annually we have R1 million that we put aside to assist, you know, students that are pursuing their higher education, etc. We pay registration fees, tuition fees, books, laptops, whatever tool of trade that, you know, a child needs to actually further their education. We do that. We opening up a skills development center, you know, with Heineken Breweries, who's based in Midvall. And, you know, this is where we're going to upskill our people, because most of the time, you know, people want jobs, but there is no formal education background or any skills, which makes them unattractive.
Correct.
Even if you want to employ them, they're unemployable. You understand? So we want to bridge that gap and ensure that we give you either skills or some sort of educational background that will assist you to be able to access the job market. You know, for me, that is very, very important.
And I'll tell you, that's exactly, go and read our policies, go and read about what we do and how we do it. That speaks to it. Because while education may not be a municipal function, so in the States, education is a municipal, education is run through the local municipality, etc. And then they have the overarching federal government that handles it, of which, you know, Vince McMahon, the guy from the WWE, his wife is the Secretary of Education. So good luck to those Bam Bam Bigelows. But local government is the core face of government. And while education is not a local government competency, it is still critically important that at a local level, we are creating opportunities for people. Because as you say, Peter, the biggest challenge sometimes is not the fact that we have a very high unemployment rate. And I must be very careful what I'm saying. The biggest challenge is not the fact that we have a very high unemployment rate. Biggest problem is that from that unemployment rate, the majority of those people have become unemployable.
Yes.
That's where the challenge sits. And if those people are given the correct skills, the correct support, the correct guidance, you will automatically cut down on the unemployment rate when you make people employable that are generally unemployable.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. This is exactly, you know, my position, Angus, on this. As local government, you're right. You know, it's not our competency. But I do feel as a leader in society that I have to do my part.
Correct.
I've got access to the private sector.
Yeah.
And also forming partnerships and relationships. So now I've got a good working relationship with the Vaal University of Technology, North West University, Sedibeng College, who assists us with some of these students. You know, most of them, some don't qualify for these government interventions like your NFSAS, et cetera, et cetera. So we, you know, they come on board and they assist us. So for me as a leader in government, I feel that it is also my role or my duty to ensure that my people are upskilled, educated, etc. And I do it. I don't have all the budget
for
to educate everyone.
But you
so hence,
contact.
I formed the contacts, I formed relationships, and they assisting me to fulfill my goal.
It's as simple as policing. Another situation where criminality and policing is not the core competency of a municipality. Municipalities look after bylaws, you know, the person playing music too loud on the corner and these sorts of things. But as a leader in a community, you can't idly sit silently when your community is bleeding and people are dying because of gang violence and drug. You need to do something. So, you know, you go in bold relationships, you bold neighborhood.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Watches you bowl, you go and find connections with police and you try and meet to them and you hold them accountable in your way. And that's the beauty of our organization, I think, is that it gives you the leverage to do that. We're not robots. We get told A, B, and C. Yeah, you can actually go A, B, C, D, E, and F. You know, but building society, building an all of society approach. It's absolutely awesome.
I just wanted to ask you, staying with the education theme, have you seen gaps in, because Angus mentioned something critically important, which is that education is not actually your function.
Yeah.
And it should be a provincial function.
Yes.
Did you see gaps there that you needed to fill? It's quite amazing that you have municipalities like the city of Joburg who run into budgets of tens of billions. And if I remember correctly, you only have two.
Yeah.
It is quite a sacrifice to actually take out of that limited budget to have to fill those gaps. And I just wondered if you could say a little bit more about the ways in which you are having to step in to fill in gaps that aren't actually your responsibility, like Angus mentioned, safety. It must be a really difficult task for you.
Look, it is challenging. Recently, earlier in the year, so there's a mega housing development in our municipality called Savannah City. And this is a housing development that will yield around 20,000 houses, mixed use. It's a mixed housing development. And the Department of Education at the provincial level went and opened up a school in January, primary school, in that area with those prefab containers without electricity, no water. The grass is about a meter high.
No maintenance.
Nothing. A brand new, what a so-called brand new school.
Yeah.
No electricity, nothing whatsoever. I think what made us get involved is my relationship with the school principals in my area. So I do have a principal forum that I have. You know, I meet them twice a year. And the principal called me and said, "Mayor, I need your intervention." But, you know, she was so afraid that she said, "Please do not say that I called you, but I need you to come and have a look at what's happening here."
Well, now you have thousands of people that are going to know she called you.
Well, she's no longer there, so I can say it now because she moved to another school.
Yeah.
But I think she was fighting for what is right and what must be exposed.
Yeah.
So I went to the school. There's your mobile toilets. I don't know if it's called a pit toilet.
Pit latrines, yeah.
And you've got you know, little 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds that could fall in that.
Yeah.
And When I investigated further, I found that it was actually someone's key performance indicator at the province to open up the school in January. So they didn't care whether the school was or it was a conducive learning environment for the learners and a safe environment. They went and opened it up anyway just to meet or pass that key performance indicator.
Unbelievable.
And for me, that was you know, it was shocking. So to get back to your question, I then got the teams involved. So we cut the grass. We assisted with the water. We had to connect them at our own cost. You know, because at the end of the day, these are our learners.
Correct. Mm.
This is my community, ultimately.
Absolutely.
I did write to the Department of Education. I even took it as far as the Premier to say he needs to come and have a look and see this. So it does get challenging. The schools are overcrowded. I'm sure it's the same thing in many of our cities. Yeah. You know, I mean, our Premier in Gauteng talks about building 10 schools per year.
Sure.
If he builds one or two per year, he will be very, very lucky.
Yeah.
You know, and the sad part is that people believe him. you know, in Gauteng, people believe him. They love what he says. We're going to build you 10 schools. I'm going to do this. And is that the type of schools that he's building where there's no water, no electricity? You know, there's snakes. Kids are complaining that they've seen snakes and stuff. Mm. It's terrible.
Peter, just to speaking about not caring.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's three of us who come from Gauteng on this particular table, and you know, our experience, at least I can speak for myself, the provincial government simply just doesn't care.
No, they don't.
Doesn't care about fixing the potholes. Doesn't care about fixing the roads. Doesn't care if there's water or electricity in people's homes. I mean, what is happening in Gauteng is quite catastrophic. And if we actually dig deeper, we look at Johannesburg. I mean, Johannesburg is decaying before our eyes.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a Joburg resident, and I think when you look at what's happening in Johannesburg, it's truly disgusting to have a government that truly does not care about the people that they claim to care about. And I saw the story. It was a very interesting one to just show how desperate Joburg residents are starting to become, right? Because, you know, you don't have water. You almost have to become like an engineer of, yeah, like, you know, of how to work the system, yeah, right? You have to wake up early. You have to charge your phone. You have to wake up early to miss traffic because the traffic lights don't work. You have to, you know, do certain things to maneuver the system, and maneuvering a system that is actually supposed to work for you, yeah, as a resident. But this was something that I found so interesting, because this is where we are as Joburg residents. We are literally in the Hunger Games. our municipality has fallen apart. But here's something interesting. Given Masiende, he moved to Johannesburg about 8 years ago. He's from a village in Venda. And he now, his job right now, is to wake up in the morning and stand at a traffic light and direct traffic. Mm. Because he knows that the robots, traffic lights, they don't work. So he goes up and he stands every morning. He says he makes about 300 rand in tips. And I think if you are from Joburg, you've seen when the traffic lights are out, there are people that will come and direct traffic. And, you know, all of us as Joburg residents, we go with it, right? Because we know that's how we're actually going to move forward. But here's someone who's saw that government is failing and is doing something. So, you know, Peter, I just wanted, you know, you are from Gauteng.
Yeah.
In a municipality that, you know, has achieved, 11 clean audits. And just next to you, there's this situation.
Yeah.
How the difference?
Yeah, look, the difference is there. You know, immediately when you get into Midval, you actually realize that I'm in a different town or city, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. A lot of people ask me, but how is it that you're getting it right and all of the other 10 municipalities in Gauteng are failing? And, you know, for us, there's a very strong culture of good governance that has been instilled in the institution over the years by my predecessors.
Yeah.
And this culture is so strong that if Peter Teixeira leaves tomorrow, the institution will still continue to perform. So it's not about individuals. Yeah. We saw, the previous mayor left, Bongani Baloyi, and there were a lot of talks. People spoke, okay, he's gone. He was labeled as Mr. Clean Audit and all of these things. And I've always said since I've joined in 2016 that the culture of this, of performance in the institution, it's something that no one can break down.
Yeah.
You know, and it doesn't matter who comes, whether it's a municipal manager or a politician, but it's been instilled, this culture has been instilled over the 20 years that the DA has been in government in Midval. And this is what I always say to residents. Yesterday I spoke at Ward 35 in Emfuleni, Sebokeng, a township in Emfuleni, where there's going to be a by-election. And I was telling the residents there that be like the residents of Midval who 20 years ago said we are going to give the DA an opportunity to govern. And ever since, we've never looked back.
Yeah.
If you look at how we've increased our votes from when we came into power, we've been growing every election.
Yeah.
We've been going up.
Yeah.
that's a vote in confidence from the residents. Correct. To say that you are doing something right.
And that's coming from across the board. Every demographic is in that direction.
Exactly. So with that particular culture is also, you know, it's one that includes a certain way of doing things. Yeah. So we've got infrastructure master plans for water, sanitation, roads, all of the basic services. So when we plan, Angus, we plan 10 years ahead.
Yeah, yeah.
Does the mayor of Joburg hear that?
Yeah. No, they've got no clue. Yeah. They don't understand.
He's already said that he doesn't plan to achieve anything between now and the next election. Yeah,
but
so
it depends on which Joburg mayor it is, because they change mayors like under William.
So what I've actually discovered in terms of infrastructure, and especially in Gauteng, is that when mayors come in, right, they've got 5 years, right, in office. Well, hopefully you remain there for 5 years.
Yeah.
Everybody looks at what it is that they can achieve within that 5 years and visible stuff, so visible service delivery. So whatever the eye can see. But every politician there in Gauteng seems to forget about what lies beneath, the infrastructure. So when the water, when you open your tap, people forget how the water gets there. When you flush your toilet, where the contents go, it doesn't come out your kitchen sink. It must go somewhere.
Yeah,
you understand. So people forget all of these things. And it's not a sexy topic to talk about for certain politicians.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the DA way, we know, we plan ahead. This is why Midvaal has got ample supply of water. I don't have water issues.
Yeah.
I've got a reservoir, a spare 10 megaliter reservoir. I've got enough electricity. My roads are not riddled with potholes because of this infrastructure master plan and good planning that we plan 10 years ahead, and we ensure that, you know, from now, whether I'm here or not.
Yeah, the master plan continues.
It continues. It outlives me.
Correct.
So, Peter, I mean, that's very interesting, but I wonder if you can sort of unpeel this issue of culture and how do you make that culture? So, I mean, I'm also from Gauteng, although thank goodness I left 20 years ago and never looked back. I was recently...
That deserves a pause and hurt.
To be fair, you're very lucky I admitted I come from there. I generally don't talk about it. So I was recently home at Davyton, and what I noticed about the streets, right, there's potholes.
Yeah.
And then there's whatever that was, because
a sinkhole.
Sinkholes, correct.
I don't know how to describe what I was driving on. And that thing doesn't happen over like one cycle.
No.
That is decades of neglect to get to a point where you don't recognize what the thing is.
Mm.
And it almost feels to me like the people in other Joburg municipalities, Gauteng municipalities, have surrendered to decay.
Yeah.
So in the same way that their culture is spiraling downwards, your culture is moving up. But what determines that? How do you put that in place?
Yes.
What elements, if you took over Joburg, what would you have to start from the ground up to change that trajectory?
So the first thing, there's got to be political will to serve the community. That's the first thing. And if you had to ask me, I think most of the other municipalities in Gauteng, there's just no political will to get things done. It's more about people's personal benefits, etc. It's not about the people. Because, you know, for us in Midvaal, I mean, I feel very guilty when I see a pothole that is there and it's there for another 12 hours. You know, I start feeling very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You understand? So for us, it's a big thing. It's a crisis. We see it as a crisis. That little pothole becomes a crisis. And these people don't care. I mean, just we border Mfuleni local municipality, which is one of the most dysfunctional municipality in the country. And just next to Savannah City, which is in Midvaal, there's a road they called Rose Avenue. Massive potholes. The mayor of Mfuleni lives in that ward. In fact, he's the ward councillor.
Oh, wow.
Okay, it's a long story how he became mayor and is a ward councillor. But anyway, he's the ward councillor and he drives on that road every day. And the road doesn't get fixed. So how, if he can't fix a road that he drives on daily, how's he going to fix all the 1,000 kilometers of road network?
There's no passion.
So also another thing is, you know, we only employ the best officials. So the mayor can't go and employ his brother or sister to be the municipal manager. We employ the best, and we always look, I must admit, that we also look at the Western Cape for municipal managers and officials.
Because
they understand the culture, you know, and the tradition. Yeah, we do poach. We had a gentleman by the name of Anton Groenewald, who came from Swellendam municipality, so we poached him from Francois there. Francois is a friend of mine, Francois de Brandt. Not that he was very happy with me, but we made peace after.
Friendship.
We made peace.
So if I get poached to Midval, you don't have to take anyone here.
I'm sure a lot of people are going to be upset.
But please take him. Peter, what is interesting is that, you know, when you're mentioning that you feel bad when you see a pothole, I mean, it's such an interesting thing, because I think we have leaders in government in our society who don't even have that shame.
That's the problem.
What is wrong, you know, in the street or with the robots, but life just continues as per normal. And one of the things that really shocked me a while back was when the premier of Gauteng, Panyaza Lusifi, apologized to the president on the state of Gauteng and failed to actually apologize
to the people.
Because the president, who spends most of his time in Gauteng, was shocked at the state of Gauteng. As he's shocked about everything else.
Do you remember when they tried to tell us the president took a drive by himself, no guards, into the center of Joburg CBD? Like, what a lie. If he did that, he would have known the state of Johannesburg.
Listen, I'll tell you about this pothole thing, because it seems like the pothole's up there. If these things qualify, they're actually wanting potholes to qualify for heritage status. Up in for real. But under DA-led municipalities and governments, you're right. As councillors, as public reps, if we see it in our wards, if we see it in our cities where we govern, it makes you feel uncomfortable. So you put the pressure on the officials to get the job done. The job must get done, even if you've got to go and fetch the official and say, "Listen, my friend, this can't go on. We've seen it happen." Whereas what's happening elsewhere is whatever.
You see, now that's the DA culture.
Correct, that we spoke about
because
at the start.
Yes, because now most of the officials that recently joined us, they complain about one thing, about Midval. They say we're too responsive.
Yeah, exactly.
Seriously, exactly. I mean, a senior manager said that to me. But Mayor, you know what, you guys are too responsive. A resident complains about a power outage, and you know, within an hour you want it resolved. And I said, but This is part of the culture that I spoke about. Yeah. The culture that I found there and that I must protect. So I can't regress. I have to continue building from that culture.
Yeah.
So that's the DA way. This is the beauty.
I'll give you an example of what Peter's saying. So in Cape Town split, it's not split, it's about probably about 5-10% of Cape Town gets direct electricity from Eskom and not from the city of Cape Town itself. If your electricity goes out with Eskom, you wait no shorter than 3 weeks for Eskom to come out to reconnect your electricity. Under the city of Cape Town, within 12 hours, your electricity is restored.
Yeah.
Within 12 hours. Look, there's a SLA that's a little bit longer than 12 hours. So you know, it's not like we're making commitments. But generally, within 12 hours, your electricity is restored. That goes for potholes as well. And if we can't repair the pothole, we make it safe.
Yes. Yep.
We make it safe. And say if it's raining, you can't repair potholes in winter, but you can make it safe in winter.
You see, Angus, this is the difference with DA-run municipalities. Yeah. We have service charters. That's what you refer to.
The SLAs.
Yeah. So that service charter tells you that you've got to repair that pothole within a certain time frame. If you fail to repair it within that time frame, let's say it says 48 hours or 2-3 days, somebody's going to fail their performance assessment.
Yeah.
You understand? That's the difference. And I can safely say that. I mean, I was invited to, to be part of a panel for a municipal manager's evaluations, annual evaluation. I won't mention the municipality, but it's an ANC-run municipality. What a mess. So if there's no performance management system in a municipality, there's how on earth are you going to measure performance of that institution?
And that's where corruption in municipalities starts. So many of us only read, oh, there's X amount of corruption in this municipality and this Joburg is collapsing. But you actually got to dig a little bit deeper to understand why Joburg is collapsing. Yeah. Joburg's collapsing because there's hardly any SLAs in place. All those municipal companies, if you want to call it that, the Rand Water and the JRA, the roads agency, these people have so been overtaken by cater deployment and corruption that they don't even need to answer back to the municipalities. Go and look at those municipal reports that those councillors get on a monthly basis. There's not even a report back. So there's no accountability. Yeah. There's no oversight. And when you have none of that, you have corruption. When you have corruption, who suffers? Who suffers the most in corruption? It's not the politicians on either side. It's the residents that suffer the most. And this is what people across the country leading up to the 2026 local government elections must understand.
Yeah.
Where they live in municipalities where councillors care, where mayors care, where there's SLAs in place.
Yeah.
Maybe we'd like it to be done in 5 hours, but the SLA is 24 hours.
Yeah.
Whether it happens.
And this is what is so important, Angus, because now I'm sitting here thinking that there are people in Johannesburg, right, who've been failed by this government, have been failed in the city of Johannesburg, Mfuleni. We can name all these different municipalities. And, you know, Ndate Tekera, maybe let me ask you this. Yeah. For someone who is sitting at home in Joburg, street lights don't work, no electricity, no water. I mean, there's a place in Johannesburg, in Ogdeen, where a community there was without water for 2 months.
Two months,
terrible. No water.
It's unconstitutional.
They're relying on the JoJo tanks to come in into the thing. But for those residents there, I mean, surely there has to be hope, right?
Yeah.
There has to be hope.
Definitely, Luyolo, there is hope. I mean, all those residents need to look at is all the DA-run municipalities here in the Western Cape as well as Midvale. All the top 10 performing municipalities are all DA-run municipalities.
Yeah.
So I definitely think that there's hope for Joburg. If they put the right government in place, which is the DA, they need to give us an outright majority like Midvale. So the residents of Midvale said, we're going to give you an outright majority so you can make decisions quick and you can serve us. Not where a mayor is in coalition and has to spend 90% of their time managing the coalition.
100%.
And not managing
managing the city, et cetera. So I say for Joburg residents, you know, they got to give the DA a chance. Let them give us the outright majority vote and let us show them what it is that we can do. So Joburg has got so much potential, Luyolo. Everything is there. You just need the right people in place. And it worries me that later in the year, we're having the G20 summit in Gauteng.
You know what's funny?
I mean, that to me, with the traffic lights not working, the mess, the potholes that we spoke about, the illegal dumping.
And there's no time to fix it. This is the problem.
Leading
up to G20, there's actually no time to fix it. There's a question that I wanted to ask you, and I think you're the perfectly placed person to answer this question, because unfortunately, again, like we spoke about, people don't read policies and they don't read the constitution of parties. The word clean audit eludes many people.
Yes.
You know, so someone will turn around and say, clean audit, but what's it done for me? I'm still poor, you know?
Yeah,
And you know clean audits, because it's clean audits that's put your municipality where your municipality is. Yes. But in layman's term, to the listener, to those people listening, how important is that clean audit? And in fact, what is that clean audit?
So in simple terms, a clean audit means that I can account for every cent that's been paid by the taxpayer or the ratepayer of the municipality. Mm. My books are clean. There's no corruption. There's accountability. I submit all my compliance documentation to government timely. My financial reports, they're on par, they up to date, etc. But the bottom line is that we can account for every cent spent, you know, by the municipality. So the mayor is not stealing the money or doing whatever. We can account for every cent. What I said to the Auditor General recently was that what we need to do as a municipality is, yes, continue getting a clean audit, but secondly, a clean audit must be understood by the resident. So it must have meaning to each and every resident.
Yeah.
So if I go to different parts of Midvale, whether it's a colored Indian area or whichever area in Midvale, and I ask a resident, what does a clean audit mean to you? They must be able to adequately respond by saying, Mayor, it means the following. I have access to clean drinking water, electricity, formal housing. My roads are not riddled with potholes. I'm employed. The economy of the municipality is strong, which allows us to access job opportunities, etc. So a clean audit must also have a meaning to residents, Angus. And I think you touched on something very, very important. It's not only about balancing the books and accounting for every cent, but it must have meaning on the ground.
Yes.
And the Auditor General agreed with me, and this is their approach now as well.
Brilliant.
So when they do these audits now, they also check what it means in terms of service delivery on the ground and whether the community is happy. Because a municipality can be achieving these things and nothing would be happening on the ground, you understand?
And I think it's important that we also, because voter education is critical. I mean, poor Peter gets blamed for policing matters and he's not even in charge of policing.
His competency.
And when it comes to clean audits, I think we also have a huge responsibility to educate voters. So that voters understand in the heart of Khayelitsha, in the heart of Midvale, in the heart of Bloemfontein doesn't get clean audits. Go and look at the result of no clean audits.
Yeah.
Potholes, heritage status, no water, no this. Come to where the DA governs, where most of them are clean audits, make sure you understand the pothole gets fixed. The water's flowing, the electricity.
And Angus, we need to be, I also don't want to put you on the spot.
Yeah.
But it's 11 clean audits.
Yeah.
And I think...
It's not 10, it's not 9, it's 11.
And I think as South Africans, you know, we... Particularly when it comes to government and the failures of government, we're always so quick to, you know, to call out the wrongs. And we should do that. That's what that's what being an active citizen is. But I mean, 11 clean audits is something that, you know, we hardly ever see in a government in our country who has looted practically everything, COVID funding. I mean, whatever that they can take, they've taken. And I think, you know, big ups to this and to you the team that's doing such an amazing...
11 is not a fluke, it's a culture.
It's a culture.
That's the word.
11 is not a fluke.
Yeah. It's a culture.
But, Mayor, I want to sort of put a tough question to you because a lot of the critiques that I see when the discussion of 11 consecutive clean audits come up is, well, what does that mean for someone in Sicelo?
Yeah.
And I actually want to specify that area just to give you a chance to talk about the challenges you're facing there and also explain to someone who's listening to you from there what this means for them and what they can expect.
So because of the good governance over the years and the 11 clean audits that we were talking about, we are seeing Midvale's economy growing at a rapid pace.
Yeah.
So a lot of people, we're seeing an influx of people coming into Midvale. And most of them come from areas like the Free State. We've got people from Kwakwa. We've got people even from Limpopo that are moving to Midvale because they see Midvale as a place where they are most likely to get an employment opportunity because of the growing local economy of Midvale. So, and that is because of good governance. We are attracting investment. We've built investor confidence.
Yeah.
People are coming. I mean, just from the beginning of this year, we've approved over 1,000 development applications.
Oh, wow.
For the municipality.
That is jobs. So
now with jobs means also an influx of people. And I just want to tell you, so Sicelo is our biggest township. Sicelo is like the Khayelitsha of Cape Town, right? And when the opposition wants to criticize us, they focus on Sicelo, right? Now, in Sicelo, we've got the formal part of Sicelo and we've got the informal part of Sicelo. No one ever talks about the formal part.
Yeah.
Mm. Where, you know, it's functional. RTPs, it's functional, everything is good. They focus more on the informal part of Sicelo. Now, the informal part, in the beginning, the people that lived in the informal settlement moved to the formal part of Sicelo. So they got an opportunity, housing opportunities, etc. And the municipality did its best at the time to try to, you know, ensure or safeguard the land where the informal settlement is. But people just kept on coming in. So what would happen? And I always speak about this in my public meetings when I get that question. So let's say, for example, you've got Ntate Mgwena, right? Who lives in Strelo in Extension 5, which is an informal settlement. Ntate Mgwena is working in Meyerton for one of the industries in Meyerton. But Ntate Mgwena, when we look at him on the housing database, he doesn't qualify for RDP in Strelo because he's already benefited in Qwaqwa, the Free State.
Yeah.
So he can't, we can't give him an RDP, whether we like it or not. Yeah. We can't give him a formal house.
Yeah.
So Ntate Mgwena's interest is not to go and rent in Meyerton or around Midvale. He wants to live in a shack because it's cheaper. He doesn't need to pay rent, doesn't need to pay services. He's got free water. He's got some electricity, sanitation, etc. His vested interest is in Qwaqwa, not in Midvale. So his interest is to live there. So Ntate Mgwena lives there. Come December, he gets his 13th check. He goes to Qwaqwa, goes back home.
Yeah.
Right? When he gets home, Ntate Mgwena, he's got money. He talks about how good things are happening in Midvale and everything. What happens in January? Ntate Mgwena comes back with two cousins to Midvale.
Correct.
That are looking for jobs who have no opportunities in Qwaqwa, no job opportunities, nothing to do there. And they come into Midvale. So now they're not going to live with Ntate Mgwena in one shack. They're gonna build two new shacks in Strelo. Mm. And this is what is happening. And I've spoken about this in a public meeting in Strelo. And the residents have agreed with me.
Yeah.
Yes, they laugh. They say, yeah, but mayor, how do you know? You know, how do you know? And I say, I know these things. Yeah. That's why I'm mayor. So Strelo, yes, there is currently there's flats, residential block of flats that are being built for the informal settlement. So we're gonna be relocating those people to the flats. There's 500 housing opportunities, and our aim is to eradicate the informal settlements. We're doing our best to do so. We are also investigating a possibility of offering site and service stands, because remember, housing is not our competency. We're not accredited to build houses. We depend on the Department of Human Settlements, who just doesn't care about Midvale. At all, and we know for obvious reasons the province is under the ANC, etc. So we've said we've got land, and we will rezone that land, cut it into stands, and offer site and service, at least water, electricity, sanitation. And if you have the financial muscle, you can build your own house, or you can wait for the Department of Human Settlements to come and build you an RTP, so that we can eradicate that informal settlement and bring dignity to our people.
And this is exactly what's happening in Cape Town. And so first I want to thank you for what you do in Midvale, because you've stopped some level of migration all the way down to Cape Town.
Order.
You're going to get us into trouble.
But you're so right. This is exactly the what happens. The informal settlements are sprucing up everywhere in developing cities across the country.
Yes.
Because it's a place of opportunity. It's a place where job opportunities are creating itself. But these people don't qualify for housing because of long waiting lists, right? And so what do? They're happy to live like in on illegal land, might I add.
Yes.
And this is where government, the ANC government, has failed the country miserably. Because you can't then service those people. You can't move those people off that land without going to court. It's an absolute nightmare. And those are then the very same people that get motivated by the very same party that place them in those situations to criticize the good work that happens in and around their place. It's a really, really sad state of affairs. And one's really got to try and change that law, because you could literally, once you've put a bed down, or you've put a chair and you've sat on the chair, you can't be moved without a court order.
100%.
That's the scary part of it.
So we have a service provider that monitors all government-owned land belonging to us or any other sphere of government. This is vacant land to ensure there's no land invasions, because we also at high risk of land invasions because of us being a semi-rural municipality with vast open spaces. And these are green fields. You know, that's why I listen to some of these politicians that talk about giving land to people. Green fields, no bulk infrastructure, nothing whatsoever. So Yeah, we've got a service provider to ensure that, that's in place.
And also, just to add on that, Angus, we as the DA actually are challenging that and trying to amend what is known as the PIE Act.
The PIE Act, yeah.
Which at times has failed to protect municipalities from land invasions, really because they put a strain, a direct strain on the financial capacity of the municipality. So the DA is acting on that particular issue, which is a very important issue, particularly in municipalities where you've got, you know, I can only call it political syndicates that 100% really take advantage of the most poorest people in our country and really motivate people to take land. And that's what's happening. People who have political agendas who are trying to, you know, really do the wrong thing and take advantage of the most poorest people in our country.
And the budgets don't follow these people.
No.
The budgets don't follow these people. So your 2 billion rand in Midvale, and my numbers may not be good, but your 2 billion rand that cover, that looks after a million people is now having to look after 2 million people.
Exactly.
That same 2 billion rand in a world with high inflation, with costs ever soaring and higher, that this mayor, this government's got to make sure that this municipality still functions as well as what it functions. And that's what boils down to the culture of it. It's that we look beyond the challenge and we just try and find the solution.
Exactly. And if you look at what's happening in Johannesburg, I mean, the south, close to Orange Farm and Elandsfontein, Eikenhof, they've invaded vast
all the way on the highway.
All the way, over the highway, the N1 highway.
Yes.
Yeah.
The same one that comes all the way to Cape Town.
Yeah.
There's parts of land belonging to the city of Johannesburg that's been invaded. You know, I mean, hills, people have gone right up. You can see there's no way the municipality can put infrastructure particular land, even if they wanted to formalize the area. They can't formalize that particular area.
It's the impossible. And then try and move those people off that land.
It's a problem.
Then you got more problems.
I spoke to the mayor, Dada Morero, about it at the Salka PEC meeting. And I told him, I said, but mayor, what are you doing about these land invasions? You know, these people have become so smart that they understand where the border, the jurisdiction is. They know that 5 meters away is Midvale and they stop right here.
Yeah, they know it by the square meter.
Because they know that the city of Johannesburg will not act on land invasions. And they do as they please. And unfortunately, like you said, Angus, you know, they appraise the people that, you know, that don't understand that are, you know, unsuspecting residents.
They take advantage. And,
they take advantage. Yeah. And you know how organized these people are. Extremely. I mean, we fought off a land invasion in 2017 in an area called Elandsfontein, also very close to the N1. There were hundreds of people that started demarcating pieces of land, right? And we found out that the syndicate behind it had taken, I think they had solicited 3,000 rand from each particular stand owner. And they'd actually appointed attorneys to protect them, to fight off the municipality. Yes.
Unbelievable.
That's how professional they are.
There's a business, there's an economy for shacks, unfortunately. There's you sell off land and you sell off shacks to people and you're happy just to go and park off somewhere else and sell it off. It's a full-on economy. Mm.
But I'm very curious. So when you spoke to the Joburg mayor asking what are they doing about this, what was their response? And I mean, I'll tell you why I ask. The thing that you said in your response about Sicelo that really stands out is how the Gauteng Human Settlements Department doesn't care. And it keeps coming up. We were talking about it when we said Morero's already said he's not going to do anything for the remainder of the term. We were talking about how Banyaza Lesufi didn't even bother to apologize to the people. And if you look at it on the flip side, you are taking proactive efforts to stop the land invasions. Your counterparts are not meeting you halfway. Funny story, how my husband started supporting the DA. There was a traffic light out in Kenilworth, and he tweeted at Helen about it. And within 6 hours, someone was there fixing it. That is what it looks like when leaders care.
Yeah.
The level of can't be bothered in Joburg.
No shame.
Yeah.
Just no shame.
Yeah. Chilled. It's galling.
Yeah. So, I see it because, you know, I attend these IGR meetings. Yeah. And I talk about these things to them. And you can tell
They just don't
care. They just don't care. You know, they're not interested. So, I mean, we've written numerous emails alerting the city of Johannesburg about land invasions that are happening. Because our residents, we've got active CPFs, community policing forums. And they're very alert. And they would let us know, and we would write an email to the city of Johannesburg saying, listen, a certain property of yours is being invaded as we speak. And they will say, we'll send out the units. Nothing. Nothing ever happens.
Yeah, just...
So they just don't care.
It's just it gets broken.
It's broken.
So obviously you've done excessively well in starting the process of getting away from Eskom in Midvaal.
Yeah.
In addition to keeping those lights on, what's the next big things happening in Midvaal?
So we've embarked on a public-private partnership, PPP, for electricity. Mm-hmm. So 5 years ago, we did an assessment on our electricity infrastructure for the entire municipality. And we found that, you know, in order to get it to the standard that we would want it, we'd need to invest around 800 million rand to upgrade that infrastructure. And if you look at our 2 billion rand budget, 800 million rand is a lot of money. Sure. It's money that we don't...
45% of
it. Yeah, we don't have that money. Yeah. We then decided at the time that we should investigate the possibility of having a PPP for electricity, getting a concessionaire that can come on board and take over the electricity infrastructure, but also have a component of IPPs, the independent power producers. And, you know, it's something that's at an advanced stage as we speak. So we've gone out to the market already. And there's been a lot of interest from abroad as well as locally. And once we can pull this off, it will be the first in the country, you know, on electricity. So basically, to try to summarize it for you as well, the entire electricity personnel would move over to the private to the private company, and they would then take over the infrastructure. They would then manage all the risks. They would then basically it would improve you know, the service of electricity, because, you know, if you do everything via government, there's certain red tape, bottlenecks, etc. They can recover the money better than we can as government. You know, people don't want to pay for services nowadays anymore. So it is something that's at an advanced stage. I'm also very, very happy with the IPP component of it. There's already, because we have vast open spaces of land, there's already interested companies as well that want to get involved in terms of solar energy, etc. But also what excites me is that there's a part where we will be able to sell electricity at a much cheaper rate than Eskom. That's to awesome. Our residents.
That's awesome.
So we've got a prominent farmer in my area by the name of Davi Barnard. Davi Barnard is a sheep farmer. So he generates his own energy, electricity. He's got solar energy. And, you know, Davi wrote to me 2 years ago and he said to me, Mayor, I'm generating enough, more than enough or more than I need to operate the farm. And everything else, the excess energy is being lost. It's going back into your grid and I'm not being compensated for that. And I think this is what made us fast track the process, because now we need to have your input-output meter.
Correct.
Know what Mr. Barnard is feeding into our grid and compensate him
for that
you know, et cetera. So we're moving this, we're moving at a rapid pace to ensure that, you know, we can keep the lights on. We're learning a lot from the city of Cape Town and other municipalities in the DA municipalities in the Western Cape. But it's looking very, very positive, I must say. And this will definitely ensure that, you know, even during load shedding, that our lights can still stay on. We saw how our businesses suffered during load shedding, even in Midvaal, where some of them were at risk of shutting their doors down and jobs that would be lost, etc. So this to us is quite exciting, I must say to you, but also with the fact that we will be able to sell electricity at a much cheaper rate than Eskom to our residents.
Oh, that's awesome. Well done.
And absolutely then well done. Just one thing that I, just to stay on that point, you know, we have a lot of municipalities that are owing Eskom and Rand Water. I mean, I think Johannesburg is probably in the millions. I keep referencing them, but I'm very disappointed in Johannesburg. So that's why it keeps coming up.
Ekurhuleni is just as worse. You know? Swane has now gone worse now since Cilia Brink left. It's terrible.
Right, but Midvale doesn't have that problem.
We don't have that problem, Luyolo. We are paid up, so we don't owe Eskom a cent. In fact, Eskom owes us money in terms of property rates. So we don't owe them a cent. We don't owe Rand Water for the water that we receive. We don't owe them nothing. Most of the time, they owe us money. You know, the thing is, and this is what I say to my residents, you know, I think it's safe to say that currently in Gauteng, we're the only municipality that is paid up to Eskom and Rand Water.
Yeah.
All the other municipalities in Gauteng have defaulted.
And yet they load shed you.
Well, we had a big fight. This is how I got to know the Eskom general manager in Gauteng. I've got his personal number, so I must be careful what I say about him. Otherwise, next time he won't help me. And this, Angus, goes back to earlier, your comment earlier about certain Eskom areas sitting for weeks without electricity. You know, in Midvale, we don't have that problem because of the relationship that I've built with the Eskom manager. So I can pick my phone up and call him personally and say certain area that's Eskom supplied in Midvale has electricity outage. Can you help? And I tell you within hours, electricity is back on.
That's the DA difference.
And I remind him, I do remind him, Angus, I'm paid up.
Yeah.
I'm a client in good standing.
Yeah.
So you must take me serious.
Yeah.
You know, and I raised this in with Panyaza Lesufi a while back when they were talking about writing off the Eskom debt on all these defaulting municipalities. I mean, my neighbor owes Eskom 6 billion rand.
Yes.
And they were going to write that off. And I said, but what incentive are you giving us?
That pay you.
Who've paid?
And I don't want money.
Yeah.
I said to them, keep my lights on. Don't load shed me.
No.
As an incentive. Yeah. Okay, they took the load reduction away.
Okay,
so you load reduction.
Maybe you got something out of it. You know, this world we live in.
Sure. Listen, I'm just saying a hustler mayor is what you need. Right. You live in Gauteng.
Especially in Gauteng.
No, I had to fight for my residents.
That band that you find yourself part of.
Yes. Yes. I said, but you're writing all of this that. Are you saying, should I also default? Should I stop paying you? Is that what you're saying? So that you can write it off at the later stage. What incentive are you giving? So are you punishing municipalities that are actually paying?
Who do the right thing.
And, you know, I owe this to my residents. Because why? They pay me on time. They pay for the services. Yeah.
You're going to hide
They don't. Exactly. I collect over 90%.
Oh, no, that's awesome.
Of rates and taxes. Incredible. So my residents are happy to pay.
Listen, you'd swear that you spend the entire day and night on your phone or in the office.
Yeah.
But that's not true. What do you do for fun?
All right, look,
Do you have a fish and chip shop?
No. I'll probably eat up all the fish and chips. But listen, I must say 80% of my time is spent doing my work.
Yes. Where
even when I am at home, I do try to also make a lot of family time. I think that is also very important. I am a father of three kids. I've got a wife as well at home. I've got a family that also does need my time. But I always keep my phone on.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know. It just makes me uncomfortable. People have said to me, Mayor, if you are taking leave, maybe switch off your phone.
It's never going
to
happen.
I can't do that. It will never happen. I will be very uncomfortable the whole time while the phone is off.
Let's upset our MPs. Local government's very difficult to turn your phone off. You guys I'm just turn your phones and be like, cheers, what are we doing? Local government's
a total different animal.
Listen,
on its
you own. Know what? Angus has been throwing shots today.
I'm throwing a lot of shots.
Peter will tell you. We are the police.
Yeah.
We are the ambulance service.
You're the doctor.
We're the doctor. We're the marriage counselor. We're the child mind as well.
Did someone come and like drag you there, or did you apply for that job?
No.
There we go. Thank you.
It's the passion. It's the
love. He went to the party and he applied.
It's the passion. I can speak for Angus on that.
I'm seeing her on the local government candidate list this year.
But Mr. Mayor, just I think we've got under 2 years till the next election. I mean, for someone who's sitting at home and just like listening to, you know, all the points that you've just made, what motivates you to do what you do? And, you know, what's driving you to keep waking up, to keep facing the challenges, to keep, you know, what's driving?
So Luyolo, as I said, I've got three children, three young children. And what drives me is that I want a better South Africa and a better future for my children. And this is why I wake up and I do what I do. You know, it starts at home, whether you like it or not. You know, there's an English saying that charity starts at home. Mm. So I want a better future for my children. And I feel that it starts with me as well to make the difference out there. So, you know, it has become much bigger. It's about my residents, my community, the love for my country. And I think that is what drives me. You know, I've always been a leader. I've always been a person that speaks for the voiceless, even before becoming a public rep. And, you know, at one particular point, I actually got tired of complaining, but wanted to get involved. And that's what wakes me up. And also seeing the good and also, you know, seeing the difference that I've made this far, you know, skills development center that we're going to be opening up, the partnership, the relationships that I have built, you know, the people that are living a better life because of the leadership under, you know, the DA, etc. That's what keeps on also driving me, you know, and people coming to me and saying, Mr. Mayor, you know what? Thank you. I know we're not in the job to get the thank yous, but, yeah. You know, we are human after all. And when people come and say, listen, Mr. Mayor, I mean, I'll make an example. I went to a conference in Durban about 2 months ago, and there was a young man who was speaking on stage. I think it was the local government summit in Durban or something in KZN. And this young man was talking, he was working for MISA, the Municipal Infrastructure group. And he came to me afterwards. I didn't know this young man. And he said, Mr. Mayor, you don't know who I am, but I know who you are. And I said, okay, from where? Are you from Midvale? And he said, no, I'm not from Midvale. And then he said, I once wrote an email to you. And I asked for an internship or some learning thing that he did with us that he wanted to do for his studies. And I granted him that. You know, and this is what opened the door for him to get the opportunity that he got to be employed at MISA. You know, and that really, I think, you know, it came at the right time at that particular time because I was, you know, in local government, you have your ups and downs.
Yeah.
Yes. And, you know, things like that, stories like that is what keeps me going, Luyolo. But also making a difference in our country. We can't always just complain.
Yeah.
We got to be the people that also come up with the solutions to the problems. And I think that this is what we've been trained to do as DA leaders of this party, is to serve the people and serve the people to the best of our abilities. Yeah. And that's exactly what I am doing. So I'm enjoying every bit of it. I get calls 2 o'clock in the morning. Mr. Lopesha, I hope that he'll be watching this. I would like to send it to you, Mr. Lopesha in Bolton World, who has a poultry farm.
Yeah.
And when his electricity goes out 2 o'clock in the morning, he'll call me. Mr. Lopesha will call me at 2 o'clock in the morning. Because why? He knows that I will answer the phone.
Correct.
And I will help him at 2 o'clock in the morning. So this is because of the love and the passion that I have for this country. And I see its potential, and I know we can be a better country under the governance of the DA.
Now, listen, Peter, on behalf of all of us, well done on what you're doing in Midvale. I think Midvale is giving the country hope. Midvale is giving Gauteng hope. And I think what you're doing in Midvale is going to play a critical role in seeing the DA take more municipalities outright, not just in Gauteng, but across the country. So well done to what you're doing. I'm very sure the viewers and the listeners feel the same way, will feel the same way, and we'd love to see their comments. We'd love to see what they have to say about this, because Peter will be watching every single comment and responding, even if it's at 2:30 in the morning. But thank you very much, Peter. Thank you very much. Well done. Don't spend too much time here. You got to get back. There's work to do, but it's been absolutely awesome.
And thank 11 clean audits.
As well as the most financially sustainable municipality in the country, according to Ratings Africa.
There we go. I must put that one out there.
And we have the poorest mayor.